Welcome to Season 4 of the Chai Brave Podcast. This is your invitation to grab a cup of piping hot chai and get ready for chaivizations that nourish the soul and inspire your everyday. This season, we're diving deep into the world of sustainable living. More than ever, we need to find ways to live in harmony with our planet. So throughout the season, I'll be talking to climate tech entrepreneurs, exploring practical tips from experts, and uncovering the joy of living a life that's good for you and good for Mother Earth. Hello, hello, and welcome to a brand new season of the Chai Break Podcast. Today, we're diving into a topic that lies at the heart of sustainable change: education. As we all know, education is more than just imparting knowledge. It's the foundation upon which we can build a brighter, more equitable future. When we empower individuals, especially young girls, we set in motion a ripple effect that transforms communities, breaks cycles of poverty, and fosters long-lasting change. Our guest today is someone who embodies this mission with unwavering passion. Meet Sumana Shetty, the Managing Director and General Counsel to Wafra, a global alternative investment firm, where she manages the legal team and oversees the firm's strategic initiatives across multiple asset classes, including private equity, real estate, infrastructure, and real assets. In addition, Sumana co-founded the nonprofit organization Commit to Change, which aims to create sustainable and impactful change in communities worldwide through education, healthcare, and economic development, with a focus on empowering school-age girls in India and South Asia. Hi, Sumana. Welcome to the Chai Break Podcast. I'm so excited to have this chaivization with you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited as well.
You know, before we go into the meat of the conversation, right, let's start off and go back to your Bangalore days and what were those days like, you know, because I feel like always early influences have an impact on what we do today. So let's begin there.
Sure. My parents are both from Bangalore, but I left when I was about a year old. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the United States, but because we're immigrants in this country, we used to go back regularly to maintain that connectivity to our culture and homeland. So I have very, very fond memories of going to Bangalore. I know as a fellow Bangalorean, it's just a special place. It's like India, but slightly more civilized, if you ask me. Early on, you started seeing also like the development of the tech companies and everyone moving to India, and you realize, and Bangalore in particular, right? Everyone was dubbing it as sort of the Silicon Valley of India. And how it's up and coming and booming. And you're getting excited about all the progress, but it was always, you know, it didn't escape me that that progress was not equal. And so I was looking at how like my own family looked at items and where they were focusing their attentions on. And it was always, quite honestly, on the boys. Mm-hmm. And it was never the girls. And it was with the girls were like, okay, like she just needs to do enough to get married, or she needs to just be pretty enough and we're going to focus on this. And as a child, quite honestly, I didn't fully understand or appreciate that, because I grew up in this country where I was lucky and fortunate enough to have a father who didn't treat my brother and I distinctly. He focused on education for both of us, and quite honestly, very militantly, as an Indian immigrant yes. dad, he was very, very, you know, like, what are your grades? Did you get an A? Okay, but is there an A plus? Like, why didn't you get the A plus? And if you got the A plus, it's like, what about the A++? So, you
know, very relatable.
100%, right?
Yeah.
We grew up in a very different environment. And so as I was getting older and the differences were becoming more relevant to me, I also started realizing, I'm like, okay, why is my trajectory different? And why is my cousin's trajectory different? And you start delving into the differences. And I think that's what started sparking the change for me, from where education, particularly with the girl child in India, is so relevant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think we see it everywhere around us, right? Especially in India, like having domestic help in your house is so common, you know, and often the mother comes in and her daughter is also, you know, working in another house. And it's just becomes a part and parcel and something you constantly see. And I remember my house help, she came and she actually pulled her daughter out of school. you know, as soon as they hit, like, they're just about to enter high school, middle school, sometimes even, and they pull them out.
Yep.
You know, they're like, yeah, that's enough. You know, that's just enough for them kind of thing. And they, you know, and I remember my house help getting married at like 16.
Yep. And then they bring their children with them. So you have three generations of workers, and it's just, it's shocking to see, but it's so, unless you look at it from our perspectives, people don't think there's anything wrong with, not that I should say anything's wrong, but they don't know differently. And, you know, once we have our, you know, because in India, you're lucky enough to have help and staff. So our driver for our family, like my dad, was super, super affectionate and loving towards him. He liked him as his own son, and he was quite smart. And so he kept telling Srinivas, he's like, you know, like, you have a family, like, we should educate the children in your family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, Srinivas, you know, he'd be really thoughtful and he's gracious for the, you know, the offer, but he would always like, what do I need? I have a shirt on my back, I have food to eat and a place to sleep. Why do we need more? And so it's that construct that I think sometimes can be stifling, because it's disproportionately placed.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he would have said it if he had a son, but because it's a daughter, it was sort of like, we can give her enough to then give her a good life through marriage. And it's always through marriage. And that's where I think the challenges start to arise.
And I think from everything you've been saying, your entrepreneurial journey is obviously fueled by this deep sense of purpose you started feeling as you grew up. And I remember in our early conversation, you mentioned one of those pivotal moments, you know, and your time in Delhi.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So, you know, like, as I was growing up, I kept this connectivity to India, and I wanted to be, you know, focused on the legal system. I'm a lawyer. And so I had the opportunity to clerk for a Supreme Court justice in Delhi, Rani Jethmalani, who's like a revolutionary hero for women and change and advocacy. And she was ahead of her time in a lot of these cases. And one of her big focus areas is dowry abuse. And I'm sure your listeners know what dowry abuse is, but in a nutshell, it talks about how, you know, when girls get married, and we just talked a lot about how marriage is the priority for girls, the bride's family is expected to give a huge portion of their wealth to enable and ensure that the girl goes to a good home. And obviously the practice started off with good intentions. It was because it was her inheritance. And so a father was giving it to her at that time because she was leaving the house, and as a surety so that, like, when she left the house, that she would be taken care of. And because life is life, that practice started becoming abused. And now you have this trend where it's, you know, you give the dowry, but it's never enough. And the group's family is asking for more and more. And the bride is usually, you know, she's tapped out. And 9 out of 10 times, the family can't afford more. They have other girls they need to marry off. There's so many factors going on in the girl's family that she can't really rely on her family to help her out in this scenario. And the group's family is relentless. So what happens to her? And unfortunately, in a lot of the scenarios that Rani Jethmalani was focused on, was where she, unfortunately, she died.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about that in a second, it's, you know, they'd always say it's a kitchen accident. And we all know what that means, right? And so it really dawned on me at that time that this girl had no outlet. She couldn't go home. She couldn't stay. She didn't have the education and tools to get her out of that situation. And as a lawyer, it was so gutting because they couldn't give her justice because the system is set up in a way that it's against her. There's no one speaking on her behalf. So how do I get this girl justice? How do you make this not happen again? And it didn't hit me until years later when I was once again in India visiting an orphanage that my aunt worked at, that it hit me like a ton of bricks. You're like, okay. So this particular orphanage, just to start from that story, was looking for money for school. All of the children were HIV positive, and they really wanted to build their own school so that the girls, because they were getting stigmatized for being HIV positive and going to the public schools. And then secondly, infections were high for them and they're at risk. So they were just looking for a small amount of money to do this. And that's, I think, when the light bulb hit me. It was like, I understand where I can actually make this change at this point. If you give her the tools now, if she comes into that situation, at least she has the resources to get herself out of it.
Yeah.
So education, as we started, is quite honestly the answer. And so we started the Path Towards Commit to Change based on that premise.
And I think education is what we call the sustainable change, right? That can actually, you know, break all those cycles and, you know, give her a way out when she's in those situations, whether she is or isn't, but like, you know, a strong foundation for her future and for her family.
100%. And it gives not only her a way out, it gives her children a way out, because an educated girl is more likely to educate her children irrespective of gender. Mm-hmm. And so you're creating systematic, sustainable change. And they do say that educating a girl child is the easiest way to alleviate poverty around the world. Mm-hmm. So it's transformative no matter how you look at it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in terms of just running a school or starting a school, a lot of NRIs and entrepreneurs in the diaspora have also done this before you. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that really struck me about Commit to Change was what you called your custom curriculum with the four C's.
Yes.
And could you explain how the four C's is different from everything else that's going on, you know, with such NGO kind of run schools, and how it contributes to accelerate learning?
Sure. So one thing we decided, my co-founder and I, when we started Commit to Change, is not to reinvent the wheel. To your point, a lot of people have built the schools, they run the orphanages, and we're here. So we can't do it better than they're doing it there from sort of like from the scratch perspective. Mm-hmm. But what we could do is elevate their learning and give them the resources to elevate what they're already doing. And so that's why we focused on creating our own core curriculum, which focuses primarily on STEM learning. So the fundamentals are necessary no matter who you are and how you learn it. You need to understand the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. But because girls in particular, where the dropout rates are much higher for girls versus boys, and you know, we can talk about all the various reasons, but we were looking at that statistic and we're realizing, well, if she drops out, what's the point of all of this work? Because then I can't create all this change we're talking about that happens when a girl child is educated. So we really started looking, and we're also like step one and step two, we're also dealing with very traumatic children in the sense they've literally at the age 10 have lived 100 lives, and lives that hopefully you and I will never see in our lifetime, right? So you're also dealing with girls who have either been orphaned or abandoned or left on the streets or sold to brothels or early marriage or, you know, the plethora of things that they've suffered.
Very traumatic.
Very traumatic. Mm-hmm. So you're also dealing with a child who has no interest in learning, as well as this idea that learning is challenging. So, you know, I can tell her, I'm like, I can give her math tools and say, you learn how to, you know, do the maths. And she's not going to understand it to the same degree as if I give her tools to like wrap her head around why it's necessary and the complexity attached to it. So what we added onto our curriculum was the four C's, which is confidence, creativity, communications, and critical thinking skills. And I talk about these in a way because when I told you the story about the girl with the dowry abuse, it's quite honestly the soft skills that were going to get her out of that situation.
True.
The hard skills would get her the employment and resources, but it's the confidence. Right. It's the understanding how to maneuver a situation. It's critical thinking. And these are the skills that actually give women and girls the power of choice. And that's what we really focus on with Commit to Change, because it's not so much that she goes and graduates and gets a college degree. It's that she actually graduates and has the tools to craft her own destiny and make her own choices. So we really infused these skills, these soft skills, into the hard skills and created a curriculum that I think, actually, I know is enhanced learning for the girls we work with. Our graduation rates are higher. Our understanding of these fundamental concepts are better. And we've talked to all of the orphanages and schools we work with, and they say a C2C girl, you can spot her out in a group. She has more confidence. She learns faster. She grasps concepts better. And it's really because we've made education interesting and tapped into something that elevates and excites them about learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can attest to that because I actually saw the videos on your website. I mean, aside from like their amazing English speaking skills, they're so confident, like you said, you know, and they can talk about what they learned and they're confident in that. And that speaks to a lot.
100%. And like, I'll take a simple example. Like, I think as children, we all love to play, you know, dress up and we love to like imagine a world. So acting and dancing, especially within the Indian culture, it's so highlighted across like, you know, the spectrum of economic spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so if I tell her that, okay, like you like drama and you like acting, then you can write a play and you can act and you can do all the things that excite you. She is going to learn much quicker. And that's what happened to our girls. We had girls that we were working with in Gujarat that couldn't speak English. And like within a year, were writing and acting and producing plays in English. Mm-hmm. And that gets them so excited. And it builds all of the skills. It builds the English. It builds the critical thinking. It brings communication and confidence and creativity. And then they're able to take that into everything they do because that knowledge is transferable.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, you know, education, statistics always tell a story, you know, of how far we've come and how much longer, you know, further we have to go, right? And I was just recently reading about girl child education statistics. And like you were saying, while there's a lot of progress, you know, the gaps are also so evident. Mm-hmm. And it's said that India's female literacy rate actually rose from 80.35% in 2010 to 91.95% in 2021. However, the significant gap actually essentially is in those rural areas where you cannot reach them as much, you know. Yes. Here, female literacy rate is actually just 54.6% compared to 82.1% for males, you know, underscoring that need for, you know, action, for targeted, you know, impactful action to happen there. Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, your future and current, something that you're actually working on is to address that. So can you talk to us about that?
Sure. And you nailed it. It's the rural areas that are not coming to the same thing. Mm-hmm. And you can't rise, a country can't rise when half the population is keeping it down, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to address this situation. And the challenge we have, particularly because we focus on this very curated proprietary curriculum, is teachers. I can't find teachers to go and live in these rural areas. And so that's one of the challenges we were trying to overcome. And quite honestly, technology has been amazing and in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways it's helped us too is we're actually piloting a program called Driving for Change, where we're going to outfit buses with computers and take the bus into rural schools where we will stream in our teachers and they can teach the English curriculum we have, our math curriculum. And then the children will be able to rotate through the bus every hour to learn. We start with digital literacy because most of these children have never even seen a computer. And so we actually teach them both hardware and software. Our girls can take apart a computer and put it back together. And they know what all the pieces are. And let me tell you, I literally don't know how to turn on my computer. I had to call our IT being like, it's not on, it's not on. And they're like, it's probably just unplugged.
We've all been there. Those panic IT calls.
So I have such admiration for these girls. So they literally learn from the basics, from, you know, hardware to like digital literacy to coding to we've started robotics and AI training. And not all we can stream in. So that's how it's amazingly efficient for us to actually be able to reach so many more children with the same technology and curriculum. And so the idea would be during the school days to take the bus to the schools and work with the various institutions to help us implement this program. And then in the evenings after school, take the bus to the slums and be able to teach the slum kids as well, because they don't have the same access that other children may have. So if we, you know, we're piloting and we're excited about it, but I think it'll help amplify our reach immensely.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not only the fact that teachers cannot go there, but also we're also living in a world where climate change is so real. Yeah. And recently, actually, just about 2 weeks ago, the World Bank Group came out with a report titled The Impact of Climate Change on Education. And it basically said that 75 million children globally are going to be affected by this. And just small things like rainfall and causing little flooding here and there is associated with kids losing out on 0.2 to 0.8 fewer years of schooling in these areas, and rural areas being the focus. So I feel like initiatives like yours will definitely you know, when infrastructure is damaged and things like that, this is where the mobile vans that, you know, help with educating these children will greatly, they'll be benefited from it.
And you know, to add on that, like for our programming is one of the wraparound skills we do is counseling. Because as I noted, all of our children come from very traumatic situations. And I note in the report that you mentioned, they also talk about like the damage it has to their mental health to deal with these issues, lose out on the, because, you know, school creates community for them as well. And so not having that resource and outlet is, you know, impactful in many ways. So we can stream in our counselors through the Driving for Change initiative as well. So it can actually like help solve for a lot of points with respect to climate. Yeah. But one other thing we're working on that I thought could be interesting to talk about as well is that with respect to issues like climate, you know, a lot of things that people are working on is like, how do you, you know, proof the buildings so they're not as impacted by the shifts in climate, or how do you do the counseling and other continuing education initiatives, which, you know, we're working on. But one thing that we're actually thinking through as well is like, how do we shift that completely? So when we're thinking about, you know, the levels of how we work with these girls, you know, first it's access and agency, which we've talked about. And the third is activation. It's like, how do we activate them through their next phase of life? And so it's not just going to higher education, but skilling. And one of the skilling things we've been looking at is actually working like with ag tech companies and precision farming like companies that look at how you can actually shift, because agriculture is one of the biggest things, kind of, right? So how we can actually train our girls in these new technologies, new farming techniques that can actually shift climate change. So it's being proactive from that angle as well.
And this can obviously economically, apart from the education, like, you know, build equity for their families as well, right?
1,000%. Yeah. So you're hitting all the buckets and you're solving for a real life issue with respect to climate. So it's really interesting that people are really focused on this area, and it's ways for us to enhance our education, you know, platform as well by giving them those tools and those agriculture techniques and technology.
More power to you. Kudos to Commit to Change. It's really, really inspiring.
Oh, thank you, Shweta.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, right, let's play a game of rapid fire to get to know you a little better, right? So, you know, in the theme of sustainability, we're talking. So, and having grown up, like having roots in India, I feel like sustainability is part of the Indian fabric. And that's how we grew up before, long before it became a buzzword. So is there one sustainable practice that you try to maintain in your daily life?
Sure. Mindfulness. I meditate every day. So it's not only just taking the actions towards, you know, conserving the environment, buying, you know, products that are made sustainably, or, you know, utilizing less resources and your carbon footprint on the planet. But I think mental health is so key and something that is so often overlooked when you think about sustainability. So I would say meditation.
Yeah. We just came off of an entire season dedicated to mental health in the South Asian space. So yeah, I totally relate to what you just said. Yeah. So what's your, what book are you reading currently?
I am reading The Age of Revolutions by Fareed Zakaria.
Much needed for the times.
Yes.
What is your favorite season?
Spring.
Okay.
I love spring when it's, you come out of the dead of winter and you get to like, you see the flowers bloom and you get to wear like fabulous outfits. I'm a big fashion person, so.
I totally relate.
With the jackets in spring.
Yeah. Mountains or beaches?
Beaches.
How do you like your chai?
Served hot. I love chamomile tea, so.
Okay. Is there a favorite Indian snack pairing you like with your chai?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of baba malva, which is just...
Wow, you brought back so many memories.
I don't know how to like translate baba malva into English, but baba malva.
Almond...
You know this from being Bengali.
Exactly, yeah.
Little sweets with this one.
Yes, oh my God. Badam halwa is like... Ugh. I could just like picture it. And that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you so much for this chivization.
Oh, thank you so much.
All the work you're doing is super inspiring. And if you, our listeners, have been inspired by today's chivization and want to learn more about Sumana's work, check out committochange.org and follow along on season 4 as we talk to more incredible women and learn more about what's happening in the sustainability space. Thank you, Sumana.
It was lovely to chat with you this afternoon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for season 4 of the Chai Break podcast. We hope you leave here feeling inspired. To stay connected, follow us on Instagram at chai_break_podcast. Want even more sustainable goodness? Sign up for our monthly newsletter at chaibreakpodcast.substack.com, packed with exclusive content, new episode drops, and more. And don't forget to like, share, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Your support means the world to us.